Niratsu, are you going to co-present? How was that left?
Aisha is going to present for us, and I'm going to present for whole group.
Okay. And Aisha sent the abstract to us today. Mm-hmm. I don't know if everyone had a chance to look at the final version of that.
It looks great. Is it short enough? I mean, it seemed to convey everything it needed to convey the first time, and it seems fine.
It was really weird because, I mean, I did a word count on a word, and it was fine, but when I put it into the GSM system, mm-hmm. it was over, so it had cut off a whole bunch, so I had to cut it down, but I didn't take out anything significant, so...
Aisha, Bob, you did a great job of cutting it down. You know what I think the issue is that in Word, when you do the word count,
uh-huh.
you get the character count without spaces, and you get the character count with spaces.
Oh, I see.
And I think they're counting spaces up on the JSM site, which is kind of a pain.
But it's fine. So I got it all submitted and everything else and put everybody's information in. So
thank you.
We're all there.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about, and we've kind of gone back and forth on the emails about JSM, and this question would be to Bob and Aisha, because both of you have been to JSM before. I'm curious as to, I'm trying to make my travel arrangements, because I need to submit that for funding, and I'm not sure how many days that I should put in to stay.
I'd love
to spend 2 weeks there, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I usually stay the entire time, but then, I mean... I just don't do this education stuff. It's a little different for me because I do the education stuff and I do some of the but also all of my friends are there. Do you know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. so I usually stay the entire time. There's always something going on.
So I think Aisha, you brought up that there are education things, workshops, kind of
right.
half day workshops and such.
Mm-hmm.
So you would need to. I don't know how much of that is up though now, but you would need to look at that.
Well, none of it is up now.
Okay.
No.
So then you'd want to, so that would be part of it, is really anything that you want to do for education? Do you want to learn some new statistical procedure or something like that?
Right.
I figured that, but I'm wondering if there's a certain time frame. Is it, you know, usually there's meetings for the executive meetings, maybe the first couple days, and then the ed stuff starts on such and such a day? Is that
The statistics education business meeting is typically the Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
And then the actual presentations are usually Sunday afternoon through Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And there can be stat ed presentations all through that. I think we're talking about meeting Monday night for the research cluster group.
Right.
Okay. So the majority of the presentations for stat ed are going to be kind of Monday through Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people, unfortunately, leave on Thursday.
Yeah.
But last year, my presentation and Andy's presentations were both on Thursday, you know. So there and over the years now, there's two or three stat ed related presentations just about every day,
mm-hmm.
Monday through Thursday.
Okay.
But you probably have to wait
until the
program's out. Yeah, unfortunately, which would be kind of. March, I think early March or so,
yeah.
something like that.
But I don't think you can register, Jennifer, until, is it April or something?
So there's no information as to what's the registration cost, what's the hotel cost, that's not going to be out until the program's out, correct?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
Some of that might come out, or, you know.
It's actually posted now. I'm looking at the site.
Okay.
It says registration opens April 29th.
Yeah, but it doesn't say the cost.
It does.
How much is it?
If you're a member and you do the early bird, which is April 29th to June, it's $335.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a member. If you're a non-member, it's $465.
Oh, I see. And yep. Jennifer, it looks like the program is available March 31st, so
okay.
you have enough time to look at it before registration opens.
My issue is that I need, because it's right at the end of our fiscal year, when I put in for funding, if there's no money left, if it's been already allocated, then I'm kind of, you know, they're trying to encourage us to get them in, our requests in as soon as possible.
Right, to use funds from this year?
Yes.
Is that the idea, right?
So I'm trying to, you know, should I just put it in now and make a ballpark estimate? They don't really like that.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's at least I can get an idea of when I can submit that.
Mm-hmm. Can you give them back the money if you overestimate?
Well, they don't give you the money anyway. I mean, they're just kind of setting it aside for you, and it's up to a certain amount. And then after that, I have to go through our provost, and if I'm presenting or co-presenting or co-author, that's what we have to talk about. So I didn't even want to get to that meeting until I knew some more information, but I think I'm going to have to make the meeting anyway or have a meeting.
So do you need to present to get funding?
We have a certain amount that we can receive each year for funding for conferences per person.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a nice amount. I'm not worried about that amount. What I'm worried about is if I can't get anything over and above that amount, because I have a feeling the cost is going to be double what I can get. If they're not going to fund me after that, then I probably won't go. I'm not going to, you know, kick in $1,000 for something that I'm not presenting yet. But I think I'll be okay. I think we're okay.
And
we can't all present. I mean,
Well, you could. With your group, Naraza's going to do the kind of research, the cluster participant thing, so she's already presenting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I wrote in one email, you could think about two or three of you presenting for like 5 minutes each. Or you could say you're all, whatever. But as far as JSM goes, there's only one person can be designated as the presenter.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
My department chair seems to think that the nature of what we're doing, that is, you are, in essence, presenting because we are co-writing.
Okay.
And that's why we don't think it's an issue. But I just was wondering if we had some more numbers before then, but we don't.
Yeah, we'll just have to keep checking. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if hotel information will go up
Okay. Before
the program's up. You would think that they'd have most of that already settled out anyways. The other thing is, whenever it's at a major city, and it's always at a major city, I go up to like this website called QuickBook, and a lot of times find better deals at the exact same hotels than what the conference is offering.
Oh, yeah. Good to know.
That is good to know.
Yeah.
I'm always camping. I mean, I'm sure there's some nice natural there, so.
All around me and the bed.
Well, while we're all together, I think I mentioned, this is Georgetta, I mentioned in an email that I don't have enough funding to go, so I'm not going. Unfortunately, I wish I could, but so I'm here for support, though. Go team! So, let me know what you need, what I can do to help support things,
Well, I imagine that we'll put together the slides pretty much in, some sort of collegial way or, communal way. So
okay.
I'm assuming that sometime in June we'll actually start actively working on that, or July even.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I'll have to look. There's there's nothing written. There's no way to enforce this, but I think there's due dates when session organizers are supposed to indicate that they've received evidence of the presentation in progress.
Okay.
And so that might be in June sometime.
Mm-hmm.
Here you go. May 11th, draft manuscript deadline. And I think that what that means is that I have to see some evidence of it. So if you just put together one slide with your title and names on it, then that'll be evidence that you're actually preparing the presentation.
Okay.
Sound good?
I think we can do that.
Okay.
That is a minimum requirement.
Yeah. But you already, by then, might already have some ideas and can throw together a couple slides.
I bet we do.
Yeah.
So, like, were we really ridiculously far ahead of everybody else at this point? Because it seemed like they were still discussing and that no one had really narrowed down their focus.
Well, I'd have to, my memory's horrible, but I remember, like, one of the groups, they seemed to have, like, two questions,
and
another group had maybe like three,
mm-hmm.
and I got a sense of there was some leaning towards, So some groups had a little more extensive literature review than some other groups. There's only three groups, So my judgment was more you were all in about the same place, for
right.
different reasons,
mm-hmm.
but in about the same place. I guess you guys are ahead in that you actually attempted to collect some data here,
mm-hmm.
You know, already. But this is very similar to what happened in the first round, too. There was one group that kind of just got focused in right away, started collecting data, but after they collected data, that threw them in a new direction, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then the group that Andy and I were working with, so you guys are different than that group in that they're the one that always seemed to be behind in the sense of actually getting some data.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been after the 2 years now that they've actually been more productive in that direction. But it's just the nature of what they were looking at. It just took them a long time.
Okay. And as we're talking about just in terms of a sense of where we are, I know that when I was looking at writing the abstract, I said to Bob that I really am glad of we're going to focus in a little more on literature review this semester, because although we did a lot of literature review last semester, I mean, it really wasn't specifically on, you know, p-values and statistical significance until the very last round.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because
we did a lot of literature review on, like, literacy and, you know, statistical thinking and all of that sort of stuff. So I'm looking forward to really digging into the literature review for this specific topic. So in a sense, I guess we're kind of doing it backwards. You know, we did a little of the literature review, and now we did the pilot, and now we're really going to delve in more. So
the concern that I had about the p-value topic and collecting data is, boy, that is right at the end of our semester. And I think we all kind of fell into that, maybe some more than others, but it's difficult for follow-up because it is so close to the end. Are you guys finding the same? Is true?
This is Georgette. I found that in my class, but I found out in the math department, one of the instructors in the math department, and they start with, you know, hypothesis testing and p-value in one of their classes. So right at the start of the semester, they do that, and that's all they do the whole semester, which actually sounds kind of boring. But anyway, so he said I was welcome to use his class as guinea pigs. So I don't think I'm going to have a problem. How are you guys doing? Isha and Nyarazzo.
I was fine in my class because I have like a two-week period usually between when the students take their last exam on p-value stuff and when they have their final. So I was able to get students to interview. And I also have access to a second statistics course, which some students use as their first course, where we actually start off with hypothesis testing stuff, so similar to what Georgette described. So in terms of data collection, I was fine. I gave mine as an extra credit on my last exam, and 25 of the 30 students did it.
Oh, great.
I just followed up with, you know.
How did you address the five that didn't do it as far as, you know, did you give them another option for extra credit too?
No. So when I give extra credit, it's basically if you can fit it in kind of thing. I'm not going to give you extra time to do extra credit. So unless you have some sort of documentation saying that you can take extra credit. So, I mean, they had the option and they chose not to.
Okay.
They had the same deadline as everybody else.
Okay. I was unsure about that because I felt like if I'm going to give, I have to give enough options so those who don't want to do it can still have an option to get extra credit. So I kind of wasn't sure how to structure that. So I just asked them to please, please, please do it for me because I'm so nice.
So that's what I did too.
That didn't work.
Yeah.
I guess I don't think I'm that nice.
Go ahead.
But I've got access to my colleague's students. So I'm actually going in next week, I think it is that we agreed. Yeah, I think on next Thursday I'm going to go in and give it to a colleague's students. But I didn't manage to get anything. They returned them blank, and I couldn't really make them do it. So, but I've got a class that I'm going to try, and this class is offered every quarter. So hopefully if his students won't do it, third time is a charm. credit and just say, you know, I'll talk to him about that, see if he's willing to give them extra credit.
Maybe it was a little different because my class is already under IRB for, you know, things related to how students solve problems. So they have been given assignments before that, you know, may or may not have been for extra credit. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't, where they're collecting information. But because this was at the end of the hypothesis testing unit, it was just a natural assignment. I didn't pitch it like, you know, here are these specific questions related to, you know, it was just, here's the extra credit assignment.
Okay. I had to go through IRB. It was required at my institution, and I had to have them sign the paper, and I had to actually remove some things from, some identifiers from the instrument. I had to take off, what did I take off? I don't know because now I have my new one. I think you did what year they were in and gender and something else, but I didn't. I took all of that off. I did say at the end, if you are willing to answer a few follow-up questions during a brief interview, please sign below. You will be contacted by the researcher within the next few days. Otherwise, leave it blank. And then I instructed them that this was a research project. I told them what it would be used for, et cetera, et cetera. So I had a preliminary week or so there that I was going back and forth with the IRB here, and they really made a point to say that they, to make it known to the students that there would be no penalty if they didn't do this. It was, it had no effect on their grade at all. So I don't know that the extra credit would work in this case. Aisha, you were already under the IRB for something else, so so subsequently I did not get. I'm kind of in the same boat as Nyadzu. The results were okay. I had a few people that said that they would be willing to interview them, but it just, we ran out of time. And I wanted to have a class discussion. I really think that a class discussion could take the place of that interview because you'd get the same collective. You might even get better responses because they would, I don't know. But I had a choice between do I finish up the material and review or do I, you know, take my research group information and have a discussion there. It could have been tied in, but I just didn't have the time.
I had 23 responses from 40 students, and I mean, a few of them were blank, like, I don't understand this, so I'm just blank kind of thing, but I did get their demographics. They knew the answer to that. And I have it, I've actually have it posted in Blackboard now, and I included all the comments. So I put a spreadsheet together with all the their comments, and I haven't spent any time analyzing it yet, but I do have it available if you guys want to look at it.
I saw that grid, Georgia. That's nice. I like the grid that you put in there.
Okay.
I do have a spreadsheet, but just with the number of students responding, is more like an item analysis, I suppose, just number of students responding to each. I didn't actually type up the responses. My main, where I got really confused is because I'm not a qualitative researcher, when I did the videotaped interviews, the follow-up, I have the information, but I'm not quite sure what I'm supposed to do with it. So I contacted someone from the sociology department here, and they said the first thing I need to do is transcribe it. But I don't know what to do with open-ended responses. I'm not sure what I should be looking at.
I found with the open-ended responses where it said to explain their choice, they restated the question.
Right. Some of them, yeah.
Yeah, and I was thinking that we could even tweak that a little bit so that the explain wasn't on there. I don't know.
But I found the issue more so in when I did the follow-up.
Yeah.
You know, it's... So I don't know if there's something I need to be going to read to figure out how to do this sort of research or how to analyze the data.
Can I tell you how my students responded?
Uh-huh.
Many, the ones who chose to respond would sort of jot down what they thought the hypotheses were and then write p-value equals and then a decision, which is kind of the way I teach them to approach hypothesis testing. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, you know, if they were just well-trained or whatever. Is that something that we think would be useful to know, you know, what they perceive the hypothesis. I mean, not all of them are right, but, you know, they did, and, you know, sometimes they made the wrong conclusion, small p-value, and they didn't reject a null, that kind of thing. So I don't know if our different teaching styles might be affecting the kind of results we're getting also, or the responses, the qualitative responses.
But is it the case that they are just doing the automatic steps, or is it that they're doing that because, are they just doing, you're saying that they did all of the steps correctly, but then their answers were incorrect?
A couple people that happened with. Some of them did everything correct. So I haven't quantified that part of it yet. Is that something you guys would want to see from me? The bottom line quantification of the results? Would that be helpful, or do you want the spreadsheet?
I haven't actually seen the spreadsheet, so I'm not sure what you have.
Okay, maybe I'll mail it to you right now.
Can I interject here?
Yes, please.
So there's still, I think, this question of what do you do with the qualitative data.
Right.
And one of the things that's usually done is after you transcribe, so for your interviews, you'd want
mm-hmm.
transcriptions.
Okay.
For the open-ended responses where they've written them, you've kind of got them already.
Mm-hmm.
But in either case, it sounded like Georgette was already doing it. You want to look for ways to categorize the responses, and not necessarily just the whole response. It could be parts of the response. It could be that there's certain characteristics of responses. And sometimes you can think of some of that ahead of time, what you expect from students. A lot of times it just takes actually looking at the whole set of responses and then asking, are there some themes that come out? Are there some common things that are going on?
Mm-hmm.
But you'd be grouping them into categories.
Okay.
And would you do this for the right responses or the wrong responses or both?
Well, being who I am, I'm usually more interested in the wrong responses than I am
right.
in the right responses.
Uh-huh.
And not just interested that they're right or wrong, but in what way are they
right.
wrong? Because that can lead to some diagnostics.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And Georgette brought up is. Might there be differences due to what's emphasized, I think. I don't know about teaching approach, but it's more like what's emphasized in the course.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good question. Does what the students write, is it indicative of what they're being taught? That would be an interesting thing right then there in of itself.
I found that the wording of the questions was, I didn't like some of the ways some of the questions were worded. I think that they were not misleading. They were too wordy, too almost like they were trying to trick the student. We're trying to get at something that's so specific. It's a subtle is a good word. A subtle difference in the language, and For an intro stat student that just learned this the week before, boy, that subtleness is not going to be something that stands out. I mean, maybe that's what we're looking to find, but I can tell you right now they're just going to be all over the place. So in that sense, I mean, I don't know if we want to rework. I don't know if we can rework the instrument because it's something that's already been tested. But I found that the subtleness of the wording is going to be problematic for the student. Now, I also teach a Stat 2 class, so I've started right now this semester just this week, and we start right in with hypothesis testing as well. Now, I'm going to take these students through, and their responses at the end of this course, if I gave them this instrument, going to be completely different than my Stat 1s. And my question when we were all talking about who we're going to give this instrument to, if I give it to a Stat 2 class and to a Stat 1 class, and if you're giving it to other colleagues, students, certainly there will be all different types of teaching styles, and is that what we want, or is that too broad? Are there too many variables that are going to be thrown in there?
I assume the teaching style is going, going to confound our results because we do teach differently, but what is our goal? What is our purpose? Are we trying to figure out what students, I shouldn't call them kids, 6 years old, But you know what students understand or how they reason about statistics, or are we looking to see how we're teaching it?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
True. So it doesn't matter who's teaching it.
We can go backwards. We can say, well, this is what they're understanding. And even going back to the question about rewording the question, if they're not understanding that, maybe it tells us something about how we should be teaching rather than just changing the wording to it's them.
I think some of the questions are worded to be tricky, and I never like to give a question that way. And when we were talking about right versus wrong answers, there are students that will get these questions right, but for the wrong reason. So we need to look at all possibilities, I think.
I guess it's interesting because I didn't find the questions to be tricky.
Not all of them.
I found that if you had a fundamental understanding of what p-values really is, it really is, a lot of it was different ways of asking the same thing, which is one of the students who I interviewed, that's what she said. She said, but all of these questions are basically the same thing, mm-hmm. asking the same thing, just in different ways. So, but you bring up a good point about intro students versus second course students. And you talked about giving this instrument a week after the student learns about p-value. By the time I gave this, my students had been working with p-values for about a month. So I would expect them to perform better than a group that who was just working with p-values for a week. So I guess we need to look at quality control on that side also.
Mine was like yours, Aisha. We had been doing it for about 4 weeks as well. So I guess that's a little different. Yeah, but that is something we need to control for.
So going back to something Norazo brought up, and that is, what is your goal right now
mm-hmm.
in what you're doing? And if your goal is just you want to see what the variety of responses are, then going into a variety of classes with a variety of approaches is probably a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you want to just see what the run of the gamut is. Now, later on down the line, when you want to see, it'll depend on what your research question is, because there's not really a research question here yet. If all you're doing is just seeing what the type of reasoning, the whole array of reasoning you can get. But if you later on are looking at if you teach this way or you teach that way, do you get different results?
Right.
Then you're going to have to do something where you can, you know, you're going to have a fidelity question, which you're bringing up quality control, and you're going to want to establish that, yep, it was really taught the A way, and it was really taught the B way over here. And so that might be that you're not going into whatever classrooms you can get into. Certain ones of you have the better situations, like where you've got 4 weeks to teach about p-value, and you can actually implement some instructional approach, if that's the direction you go.
I guess I'm thinking, well,
yeah. I would have more time. I mean, when I say a week after, that would be if I wanted to follow up with interviews before the end of the semester. You know, we spend about the last month on inference as well.
Oh, okay.
But if you're talking about first you're teaching it, then you're working with it, and now you want to, you know, give them this instrument, then you want the follow-up before they leave you for the semester.
Well, that makes me think, I mean, how many videotaped interviews do we want per person? I mean, are we looking for 5 each or, you know, as many as possible? What do you suggest, Bob? Is that something we need to worry about?
Well, if what you're trying to do right now is just kind of document the variety of ways students think about p-values, is that kind of what the flavor of what you're doing right now is?
That's how I was looking at it.
Yeah, I agree.
Then what you're looking for is, you know, it seems to me if you each had 4 or 5, like you were suggesting, Georgette, so now you've got somewhere around 20 students who have been interviewed. And you're looking for some variety, I think. You know, it's more about what types of responses could you get or what types of thinking happens. And to me, it would be nice if it was after about the same amount of instruction on p-values.
Okay.
I mean, you guys can think about that, but of course, if they haven't been presented anything and you ask them these questions, you should get very different responses than after 3 or 4 weeks of instruction. So if what you're trying to do maybe for JSM is present preliminary findings on what can you expect even after some instruction, and you're going to have from weak to strong students or those who understand it well to those who have a very cursory it'd be nice if you could have examples of each of those things. So you're looking for some variety.
Is there a reason why you would videotape rather than just strictly audio tape? I mean, we talked about before about, you know, mannerisms and things that you can see in the videotape. I just find it more intrusive to a student to say, I'm going to videotape you versus I'm going to tape our conversation.
How do you usually videotape?
I don't at all. I haven't.
Because when I videotape, I usually videotape just the students, usually from neck down, because I want to see what they're doing with their hands.
Okay.
I don't videotape faces.
Okay.
Or sometimes I videotape with the video shooted, just you can't really get their face in. But then again, I do have IRB too, and students have signed off on full length videotaping, so.
I like that we're talking about, Niraj, you brought up, what is our goal, and yeah, it's a variety of responses. I'm wondering if then when we look at the responses that we have on the explain your choice, that really is the answer that they would give us in an interview. Did you find those to be the same, Aisha?
I did not.
Okay.
Because I found sometimes that either the student just kind of in the explanation on the sheet, they just reiterated what the question was. Whereas in an interview, I was able to pull a little more out from them. Because some students are just, I mean, some students gave me a paragraph and some students gave me one line. You know, because they said, you know, because that's the definition of p-value.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that? Do you see what I mean? And how did you, you know, make the connection between this and the definition? What is your idea of the definition? And I can get that in an interview that I could not get directly all the time on their sheets.
Do you think that a group, a class discussion, maybe either, I'm thinking a full class discussion or small groups you would miss the individual conversations, which then would, well, but it, a class discussion, do you think that would be helpful to us?
I kind of prefer the individual because, just judging from my classes, there's some people who are just very confident and very vocal,
mm-hmm.
and can lead everybody astray because
exactly.
everybody, they know what they're talking about and they don't really say what they think. Mm-hmm. They're not going with what the vocal person says. So we might lose some of those differences in how they understand the p-value. So I'd rather have the individuals and a one-to-one conversation about that.
I was thinking both. I was thinking, would there be a benefit to, I guess it would just be the same as class instruction if you have a conversation about p-value.
Right.
I'm pretty sure there's some literature out there on, you know, feedback from groups versus individuals.
Sure.
As far as I know, there's a lot that encourages these think-aloud type things,
mm-hmm.
Where it's more one-on-one or very, very, very small group, like 2 or 3
mm-hmm.
students getting feedback. What I liked about doing the individual students was that because I knew the students well enough to, some of them I was surprised by, you know, like if a good student gave me the wrong answer and a, you know, not so good student, you know, it was just little things like that I could pick up on from the one-on-one
mm-hmm.
that may not necessarily be relevant to what we're doing, but as an instructor, it was insightful.
Well, you guys might want to think about, I think, Jennifer, you brought this up in a way about the wording, and you guys have brought it up a couple times when you ask them to explain and they just give you back something like, well, because that's the definition.
Mm-hmm.
And so is that what you were looking for? And so then, you know, it might be a question to Aisha. So what was it about what you asked in the interview that got you more information than just asking explain? And if you can, if there is something there that you can see systematic, does that suggest something for, instead of just explain, is there some other wording that would prompt,
mm-hmm.
you know, more of the students to give you that? Then my last breath on that, though, but it might be an indicator when the student says, well, because that's the definition, that might indicate a certain level of understanding
mm-hmm.
right then and there. That's all they know. They know this rote definition, and they really can't.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have an idea of how it relates to other statistical concepts and so on.
But when in the interview, I was able to follow up on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that, and I don't know that I could have, unless I was walking around saying, you know, not enough information.
Right.
You know, while they were writing it.
Questions two and three. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and people do need practice with answering questions that are different than a question format than they're used to.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all kinds of studies that show that if you give them a little practice, they do better than if you don't give any practice. So that's something to think about, too. And was it Jennifer that I interrupted there?
Well, I was going to say that question two and three, I'm looking at the here, and question two is the probability, it says the probability that the drug is not effective, and question three is the probability that the drug is effective. And I think that that is a classic case of, they're going to answer opposite, and when they explain their choice there, we're setting them up, I think, to answer in an opposite manner for their explanation. You know, if one's going to be valid, the other one's going to be invalid, and then the reasoning is going to be the opposite. I don't know that we're really gaining two different pieces of information there.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting, because I didn't find that in the I looked specifically at those two questions because I expected that to happen. And what I saw was that students were more likely to both, you know, to say valid for both or invalid for both for some reason.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
Because
mm-hmm. when we've got a similar question on confidence intervals
mm-hmm.
and interpretation of confidence intervals,
mm-hmm.
and there's like three or four interpretations. There's students who say the valid one is valid, and and there's students who say two, three, or four of
right.
you know, all of them are valid. So they don't necessarily see the inherent contradiction.
Mm-hmm.
And then
mm-hmm.
and then your question is, so why is that? I mean, our
right.
question should be, why is that? And that's where,
mm-hmm.
If you're aware of it, that's where some probing in an interview could be helpful.
Well, actually, I see a response here that says they answered invalid to both, and it says we're getting results. We're getting probability to get some results. We're not getting the probability of the drug's effectiveness. So they're looking more at it as a probability, like the question was worded incorrectly. And that's, you know, I mean, they thought that we were, the subtlety of the wording. They thought the wording was inaccurate.
And they would be right.
Mm.
Isn't that correct? That
mm-hmm.
it's neither the probability that the drug is effective
that's
or
right.
the probability is not effective. It's a much more nuanced thing than that. So to
yeah.
a certain extent, they're on the right track.
Right.
Yep. So, okay, so I can see that the...
So the person who says that they're both valid, that's the more problematic
that's right.
situation, it seems to me.
Yeah.
It seems when you have two questions like that that seem to by opposite, I mean, that it's almost like it's checking that they're not just saying something out of memory, they actually understand it.
But they're not opposite.
So, but that's how we know whether they're understanding it or not. Because they could get the first one right just by, you know, just because they've memorized something. But if they get the second one right as well, then we might be more confident that maybe they do get this.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking that that some students, though, will pick up on that they can't both be true.
That's right.
They could both be invalid. But they probably can't both be true. And then does that make them question what the test is trying to test about their understanding. Almost going back to Jennifer, you saying that, you know, it's not a trick question. They're not trick questions, but maybe if you had that perspective as a test taker, then they become trick questions for you.
If you overthink it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I was just thinking, I don't have a, this is not a well-formed thought, but if you had like three groups of students, one group that took, had both questions, another group that had only one of them, the other group had the, only the other one, do you see the same rates of them choosing valid and invalid for those questions? And then if not, that would indicate something about answering the two together is different than answering either one separately. And that's kind of more of a measurement type of question.
Mm-hmm.
How those items perform, not so much how the students perform, but what's the characteristics
right.
of those items.
Are there perhaps too many items? Is six too many to delve into? I'm just throwing that out there.
I just saw a presentation. We've got some faculty candidates coming in for a measurement position in our department. We just had two of them this week. And yesterday, a really sharp person gave a presentation, but for one of her subscales, she had only two items.
Mm.
And it wasn't like they jumped all over, but definitely two of our faculty said, well, you know, what about that? So if you're trying to actually estimate a person's understanding or ability, there's something about do you have enough information to actually estimate that.
Mm-hmm.
And so typically the more questions, the better, as long as they're not all exactly the same question. They're getting at different parts of the understanding. You'd rather have five or six questions than just have only two or three.
I don't think six was too much. I thought it was, a good number. I like five better, but lucky number, so I'll sort of go with six.
But this is the pilot, right, guys? So, I mean, we're still at the point where we're not even quite sure if these are the six questions that we're going to go with. It was just, at least the way I thought it was that this was just a jumping point mm-hmm. to really get into seeing what our students are thinking.
So all these things that we're talking about, the rewarding questions and how many items to have, you know, depending on when we all have our data together, we can look at it and make a decision at that point based on the results that we find from our pilot.
Mm-hmm.
That's the purpose of the pilot, so we can tweak it. And
but do we want to, this is Drea, do we want to change the wording? Because aren't we using an existing instrument, and wouldn't we want to continue to use that? I just don't know. I don't know, like, what, you know, I'm sort of a freshman researcher here, so I don't know. I mean, is that something that's done? You just completely change somebody else's instrument, or what? Does someone have some...
Well, it seems like if you're going to change an instrument, then you can't expect it to have the same reliability as the original, so you might have to do your own kind of psychometric analysis on it to see if it's still reliable
okay.
and it's valid.
Yep, absolutely. And if you're changing it, technically it's no longer that instrument anymore.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But what Narazo said is, yep, you would have to go into a stage of gathering enough information from enough people to get some estimates of reliability, and you'd also probably want some external expert judgment of are these questions valid and are they measuring what we think they should be measuring, you know, asking for the knowledge you think should be asked for.
Okay, in the interest of time, we should probably talk about the literature review, or do we want to still keep talking about the instrument?
I'm going to throw in something for guidance. Do you guys want to agree on how you're going to share your data with each other? You know, what each one of you is going to present, or how are you going to put that up on the bulletin board? And
I posted mine on Blackboard. I also just emailed it out to you. We don't have, I mean, that's just a suggested way. I just like that you could put Excel comments in. But I haven't analyzed the data, so that's all I've sent you is just the raw data. What do you guys think? Do you think we should do something else?
What I'm getting at is, are you all going to have your raw data in the same form? or the same raw data? I'm not making my question clear, but it seems to me first might be a step of just get all the data together.
Right.
And it would have to be of the same type of data in order to do that.
Okay.
When you've got that, then you could have even email conversations or up on Blackboard. I don't know if you can talk, but then you each could start looking at it, the whole, you know, everything that you have, and start having conversations about what you see or ways of looking at it.
Well, George S. was very detailed, and it was each question and what the answer was. And can we just add to yours, George S.?
If that's okay with everybody else, I mean, I don't mind changing, so I'm flexible. I have some time to work on it. What do you think, Ayesha?
That's fine.
I know you did some work on it.
That's fine.
Okay.
How about the explain your choice?
She has it in there. So if you toggle over the red, she actually did type in.
Okay.
That's what the comments are.
So you would right-click on the cell and select Insert Comment, and then you type on like a little notepad thing. And then anytime you hover your mouse over it, the comment will show. The only problem is that it's not easy to just sort of print all of that. So I really didn't, from a design perspective, I wasn't sure how to do the spreadsheet. What do you think? Ayesha, I know you collected your – did you collect your data onto a spreadsheet yet?
No, because that's why I was asking Bob if we're really interested in the right responses or the wrong responses. So I would probably just, you know, type up what the student said for the, you know, the wrong response. I don't know.
But they could have just guessed for the right response.
But let me say something else, though. When I graded my students, if they chose the correct, you know, true or false, but the explanation was wrong, then it was wrong. And that's how I grade, so my students weren't, like, stressed out by that or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So if they said true, but it didn't, you know, the explanation didn't support a truth,
mm-hmm.
then it was wrong. It was incorrect.
So
it sounds like you've got a couple pieces of information, what their response was,
mm-hmm.
what their explanation was,
mm-hmm.
and then a judgment of whether that is right or wrong.
Right.
And I think you'd want to keep all of that information.
Okay.
I think you don't want to just know that you graded it as right or wrong. I think you want to know this more conditional information.
Okay. Bob, is there a way that people normally set up these sort of spreadsheets?
No, there's no written rules.
Okay.
But what I was just laying out is, I mean, you guys are all probably good spreadsheet users, and I just think of a column as a variable
mm-hmm.
or something I want to record.
Mm-hmm.
So what I just said there was three columns. One is actual response, one is written explanation, and the third one would be a grading judgment, I guess.
That's what I was just thinking. Mine's in my observations are in rows, so each observation has three rows to it. You know, rather than using the comment. So I could redo mine and send it out to you guys and see what you think.
As far as the grading piece, I guess I'm not sure why we need that. Do we need it?
And that's fine. I'm just saying that's what I did.
But I mean, you gave the feedback to the student as whether or not that question was right or wrong?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Uh-huh.
So you might somewhere down the... So let's say what I'm hearing from you, Jennifer, is you just record what the response was and what their explanation was.
Yeah, and then we can categorize the explanations into these are thoughts. These are maybe four areas of thought processes
mm-hmm.
that the
mm-hmm.
students are on.
And then you could somewhere down the line look at, like, say, among those who gave the right choice, do you consider their explanations to be correct or not correct,
right.
and possibly to what degree, and that might be that categorization.
Okay.
But that would be something you do as a group, and no offense to Ayesha,
no.
but not just based on how you're looking at it and how you're grading it.
Well, she was giving it as extra credit, so I can understand, Ayesha.
Oh, certainly.
You were grading it, but I'm thinking the students didn't get these back. I mean, I got them, and they gave them no feedback. So that would be that's not something that I've measured yet. I could do it in the future, but I haven't yet.
And what I'm saying is, I think what I'm getting at is, and essentially you might end up doing exactly what Ayesha basically did.
Yeah.
But further down the line, but I think the I think what you're saying about let's just get the raw data first makes good sense.
What we have, yeah.
As far as the wording of the question, I know I made kind of a big deal about the wholesaleness of the questions. I agree that we should not change questions that have already been, you know, we went through the RPAS and the chaos, and these have been tried and true, and we should stick with them. I was just trying to bring up some points that I saw my students struggling with.
I agree. Mine were, like, valid, and I thought, oh, I really need to emphasize that more. They really didn't have any idea. I guess I just wasn't using the word valid as, you know, correct. I don't know. Well, I think we have 5 minutes, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So the information that Bob sent us, is that what we will be delving into for the next meeting?
I think we should. I started reading it, and there were moments when I wished I could call back every student I've ever had. So I could straighten out some things. I think this will be really helpful for us as we move forward to think about the subtle differences in how students understand this concept.
Yeah. So is that what we're reading for next week? And I guess we need to discuss roles also.
And when our next meeting will be.
I can tell you the role of what you think of the next meeting.
Okay.
I'll be the organizer. Sajet, you're the moderator.
Okay.
Jennifer, you're the synthesizer, and Aisha is the recorder.
How about a date? Does this time work for everyone?
Yeah.
Or is it a bad time?
This works for my Fridays. I don't teach on Fridays, so I really bow to everybody else's schedule.
My Fridays this semester are actually in the afternoon. I actually have a standing meeting starting. Classes start for me next Tuesday. So
okay.
Fridays are not the best date. Thursdays,
I teach all day on Thursdays. I have my mornings on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday free, so it's one of the other days as well. But my classes are stacked back-to-back on Tuesday and Thursday.
And mine are stacked Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Saturday. No,
yeah.
Midnight?
We'll have asynchronous.
But is there an issue with
what
happening on the
Saturday? What time is your standing meeting, Aisha?
Usually until 3:20.
Oh, wait, what?
1:40 to 3:20. That's all time block.
So we could, 4 to 5 on the East Coast, and that would be, are you on the East Coast? I can't remember where North Carolina.
I am on the East Coast.
Okay, and then what would that be for you, Nyarazo? Is that 1?
1 o'clock.
4 would be minus 14, minus. Okay, so minus 3 should be 1.
That wasn't even over like noon or anything. That was just 4 minus.
Of that 12, the 2 is 14 and it's 11 here. So 14 minus 11, that must have been 3 hours. So 3 hours, okay, never mind. Yeah, 1 would work for me.
Would that work for you? Are you sure you think you'll be back by 4? Is that cut into family? I know you have kids, right? So
no, I don't have kids.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you did.
That's okay.
Me, but you can have mine.
At this point, I can't commit to doing it to sticking to that time. But I can, depending on what day are we meeting again next?
How about February 26th, which is a Friday? It'd be about a month from now.
Can we do it? This is, you know, feel free to say no because I have less going on, but would it be possible for us to have 2 meetings in February? And I'm saying that because I felt like there was such a long time between when we spoke in November. We kind of missed December, although there was that conference call.
Did we have funding for 2 meetings?
Funding?
I mean,
you know,
for Ready Talk.
Conference call.
I mean, I guess we could find an alternate
I just wonder if for 1 meeting we can focus on, you know, just if everybody can get their stuff into the Excel sheet. And because we didn't really talk about the pilot results, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So maybe the 12th and the 26th.
But Georgette brought up a good point. Are we going to have funding for that?
We could use the Blackboard site because we can use a discussion forum there.
Yeah, we could. We have a discussion board.
So you could do that. I you know, but like you say, you guys did not have a conference call.
We did not in December.
In December.
Right.
So I think I don't think that's an issue. I think you could do twice in
February. Okay.
So say I at least.
I just think it would be great if we could on the first meeting, if we can just have that meeting the entire time. And I know we have discussion board, but talking is so much better.
Yeah.
If we can just on the February 12th just talk about the results. And by then, everyone should put up their info on whatever sheet we decide on.
Okay.
That sounds good. Do you want to go with the 12th? That would be 2 weeks from now.
Is that okay with everyone?
It works for me. That's 4 o'clock.
4 o'clock Eastern time.
Okay.
4 p.m.
Okay. I'm actually getting my data on the 11th, so.
But
sleep is overrated, so, you know.
Well, we could do the 19th, you know. The 19th and the 26th.
Yeah, why not?
Yep. That's okay.
Yeah, because that'll give you some time to think about it, too, rather than just crunch the numbers.
Okay. And I won't be able to join you on the 19th, but that just means Andy will have to.
And then again on the 26th?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So for the 19th, are we just focusing on the pilot questions? On the 26th, we'll do the readings?
Yeah,
that
sounds good.
That sounds good.
That gets me out of a faculty meeting. Woo!
Oh, no.
No, that's
at
4
o'clock?
Yes.
On a Friday? Woo.
Uh-huh.
That's tough.
I know. I think it's on purpose. But.
Okay. So just to be clear, are we going to stick to Georgette? No. So we're going to go with what Bob said, and we're going to have one column with the response and one column with the explanation to the student?
Sure. So the observations will be columns. I'm just trying to visualize this.
So you've got six questions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you'd have these six pairs. You'd have 12 columns is, I guess, what I'm thinking. And you can either be response, explanation, response, you know, question one, response, question one, explanation, question two, response.
Oh, I see. Okay, got it.
You know, so that's one way, or you could have questions 1 through 6 responses and questions 1 through 6 explanations. But I guess in my mind, I like the pairings.
Yeah, me too.
So
each row would be one student.
Yeah,
okay, great. That'll be really pretty straightforward. All right.
Sounds great.
Okay. So if you guys have any suggestions on the Blackboard, I don't know if this is helpful at all, but I thought at least we have a repository. So.
Okay.
Yes.
I think you guys had a great conversation here.
Yeah, today was great.
It was great.
Yeah, it was.
Thanks, everyone.
Okay.
Have a good weekend.
You
too.
Thank
you.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Somebody have a dog. I'm breathing.
Thank you. Please stand by.